Well, you know what it's like. You've got dust on your sensor, the light is crappy, and there's no wine in the fridge. It must be time to record this week's podcast. Hello all, welcome to this Mastering Portrait Photography podcast. I'm Paul Wilkinson, and once again, it's time to sit and lament the week, talk about the things that are good, the things that frustrate me, and the fact that there actually is no wine in the fridge. And this week, we're going to be talking about bags, because it's been a heck of a week, all sorts of things going on. Mastering Portrait Photography, we've shot some new videos, which you will see in due course. Lovely, absolutely lovely. Sinead came over, absolutely brilliant shoot. I've been working with a company in Oxford, and it's always a joy to photograph in Oxford. It doesn't matter that it's corporate work. I just love being in the city, and I am looking forward to photographing something a little bit more portraity in there in the coming weeks as well. A couple of really beautiful family shoots, which I always love, you know that. And then the reason I'm talking about what I'm going to be talking about at all is that I've just spent 3 days in Ibiza. Which was just a joy. Oh my goodness. There's bits of traveling I don't like. I don't crave traveling with a camera. I really don't. I don't get to travel first class. I don't get to have unlimited baggage allowance. I don't get to take as much kit as I would like. In fact, it terrifies me that I haven't got everything I need. So you're always packing to be risk averse, but still stay within your weight limits. But I've been photographing for a family who have a home, a second home in Ibiza, and they had a family party, and they could not have made me more welcome. Not only was I photographing portraits of them, their family, the kids, but they also invited me to be a part of the celebrations. So I sat and ate and drank with them, and generally had the most glorious of times. I'm also taking pictures of this beautiful estate and house that they've been putting together in this fantastic garden. And part of the job is for me to document the changes in the garden, not only over the seasons, but over the years. And it means some early mornings. I'm up at whatever time, 5:30 in the morning, to be up in time for dawn. Because, of course, the light at dawn is a lot nicer than it is at midday in Ibiza, not just from a temperature point of view, but those really hard, short shadows. And then, of course, I'm working all the way until the sun sets, because, again, that's when the most beautiful light is. But 3 days away, really enjoyed it. The most terrifying bit, of course, being packing the bags, which I find really, really stressful. I spend a long time doing it, unpacking them. So I have to unpack my regular bag and then pack a new bag ready for travel, and then come back and then do exactly the reverse while checking kit the whole time. And so I thought it'd be a good time to talk about something that I get asked a lot. Now, what you might not have realized is that these podcasts are essentially led by things I've been asked. We have a long list of podcast topics that people have asked me to answer questions on. Some will become podcasts, some will become videos, some will become articles, and some will become some combination of the three, depending on what mood I'm in when I get round to answering it. This particular one is literally, what is in my bag? What do I keep in my bag? So there's two parts to this. First part, of course, is what's in my bag normally. And then the second part is, what do I travel with? And it's really important that you learn what you need and what's the minimum you can get away with, and still have enough gear that if something goes wrong, you're going to be okay. So bearing in mind that once I've flown out to Ibiza, or any of you, if you've done this, you've gone out to a location, you need enough kit with you to survive failure. Because there's nothing worse than a shutter collapsing on a camera or a diaphragm closing and staying closed on a lens. And these are both things that have happened to me on live shoots. So let's talk through what I have in my bag. Now, my bag is a very, very battered Manfrotto wheelie something or other. If anyone's really curious, send us an email. I'll tell you the exact spec. I think they've improved the design of the thing now, But when I bought it, it was, the interior is pretty well designed, but the exterior is not tough enough for the job. There's too much fabric and not enough plastic, or not enough guarding on it. And so the plastic has ripped itself to shreds in between the wheels. But it's still a good bag, and it's the only one I've got anyway, so it has to be good. I think next time I might get a Catter bag, but they're pretty expensive. So in the bag, let's start with the basics. I have a Nikon D5, of course, which is my key camera at the moment. And then I also have a spare camera. I've always got two cameras in the bag. At the moment, that's a Nikon D4. And generally here at the studio, we buy one new body every few years, and then the old body gets a good service and a good clean and becomes the spare. So at the moment, there's a D5 and a D4, and I know those are pretty big units. Occasionally, if I'm thinking, well, I might be doing some landscapey type stuff, I will pack our D800E in there instead, because that resolution and the sharpness on the sensor is pretty impressive. But actually, I love the handling of the bigger units. All the buttons are where they should be. All of the controls are where they should be. Whereas I find the D800E, the D850 as well, it just isn't quick enough to use when I'm doing portraiture. So onto the lenses, that's two bodies, one prime, one spare. Onto the lenses, I carry a 70-200. That's the Nikon 70-200 f2.8 VR2 in our bag at the moment. I don't have the VR3. I've mentioned that before, I think, on a podcast. I'd love to have the VR3, but the optics on the VR2 are pretty impressive. And the only thing I'd gain from the VR3 version is it's slightly smaller and lighter, which I would love. Of course, I'd love. But at the moment, I cannot justify that. Everything we do in the business has got to have a return on investment. You know, we're a pretty smart business like that. I don't just get to buy whatever I want. Nikon, as of now, are not donating any kit to me, much as I'd love them to. And so every bit of kit we have is justified, and that's how we pay for it. You know, we use it enough that the money coming in from the photographs we sell will pay for it over a number of years. So at the moment, we have Nikon VR2 in there, 70-200. I also have normally in there my favourite lens, which is the Nikon 105 f2DC. Now, I know we've talked about this lens quite a lot. It's an esoteric, old-school 105. I don't think there's many bits of glass in there, three or four probably. I should know. But I tell you what, it's one of the most beautiful portrait lenses I've ever had the privilege to use. And I've owned a couple of them. I've only ever bought them secondhand, never managed to get hold of one new. I don't even know if they make it anymore. But it's my go-to favourite lens if I get the chance. We also have a 50mm. That's the AFSD 1.4. 50mm lens. This isn't my favourite lens, if I'm honest. It's very slow to focus, and it renders really well, but the speed of the focusing is so slow. I find it incredibly frustrating, whereas the older screw thread lenses, where it had to be motor driven from the camera, are so fast. The camera drives them absolutely brilliantly, and the F2-105 is one of those old school lenses, and it pops into focus in a heartbeat, whereas the 50mm chugs along. I mean, it's silent, but it chugs along and eventually grabs some focus. And then another lens I've got in there just at the moment is a 35-70 f2.8. Now, this is my very first Nikon lens. It's a beautiful thing. It's steel barreled. It's got a push pull zoom. Can you imagine what that's like? Those are the oldest type of zoom lenses. It's got a push pull zoom on it. But actually, the optics on it are pretty fantastic. So if any of you have seen the cover of the book, Mastering Portrait Photography, this is the lens that I used to capture that image. And I think in a future video, I'm going to grab the Nikon D100 that I've scrounged back from my nephew, my original D100, the first Nikon camera I owned. I'm going to slap the first lens on it I owned, and I'm going to go back into the studio and see just what happens when you create pictures with it. So look out for that one. And I'm really enjoying using it again. I'd forgotten I'd got it. For a while, it didn't seem to work very well with the cameras. We got all sorts of vignetting effects, and everything was just a bit off. And so I parked it on a shelf and never really picked it up. Anyway, I picked it up recently to see actually whether to sell it. stuck it on the front of the D5, and the D5 loves it. It's great because the screw thread drive on the D5 is so fast, the lens clips into focus in a heartbeat. It's got a macro mode on it that you can twist the barrel and it turns itself into a macro lens. It's a really neat, versatile little lens, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. The optics, it can ghost a little bit if you get backlight on it, but I'm really enjoying using it. So for now, that's back in my kit bag. And then I've got my wide angle lens, which is the 17-35 f2.8. So there's my lenses, a 70-200, a 105, a 50, a 35-70, and a 17-35. And the idea of that range of lenses is if any one of those lenses failed, I can probably get away with using the others. If the 70-200 failed, I'd just use my legs a bit more, switch the combination of the 50 and the 105. If the wide angle went, I can use the 35-70 and move back a bit. It's not as good for big skies, but it's not bad. And likewise, I can switch it around the other way. So that's the lenses. I also carry two speed lights at the moment. These are old and battered SB900s. We're just in the process of justifying the new Profoto. What's it called? The A1, is it? Speed light. I'd shied away from it, but given I use Profotos throughout the studio, it would make a lot of sense to have that as my controller. So when I'm out on location doing a wedding, I've got the Profoto unit in there. So I've got two of those, two Nikon speed lights, a whole heap of batteries. Everything's got rechargeable batteries in, but still I carry a box of AAs, just normal Duracell industrial type AAs, as a just in case kind of thing. Right down in the back of the bag, I always carry a full cleaning kit. You never know. I did one wedding once and a bit of grass got right in under the mirror. I change my lenses while I'm working, and how a bit of grass got in there, I have no idea, but it required a pair of tweezers and a lit loop to get the damn thing out. And luckily I had all of that kit with me and could clean it before I had to go back in and carry on photographing. So we have a full cleaning kit, including a sensor clean kit in the bottom of the bag. Also got in there a multiplier and a macro ring, so that if I do decide, 200mm isn't long enough for a portrait, then I can put the 400mm on. The other night I needed that. We were shooting the Champions of Magic down in Brighton, and that extra long lens just let me grab right in on the stage without being down in the pit. It was really, really useful. So that's we've got that in there. I know it halves the amount of light coming through, but it's still pretty effective. And then I carry macro rings if I need to suddenly take a picture of something really close up. I mean, I guess the only thing that ever happens like that is things like wedding rings. Sometimes I feel like not just taking pictures of people, and I'll take a picture of a wedding ring or some detail. And so I've got the macro rings in there as well. We've also got a couple of different types of remote release. I've got a radio remote and a normal cabled remote. Those are for when I'm shooting something and I decide I need a long exposure. It doesn't happen that often, but occasionally it's lovely to do something where, I don't know, light trails on a road or the sky with clouds skidding across some beautiful venue. So it's useful to have those remote triggers. And pretty much the only time I use them is for that. In fact, I don't think I've ever used a remote trigger with a camera to take a portrait. I'm trying to think. Nope, not once. I don't think I've done that because I don't like the fact when I'm not looking through the viewfinder, people look at my face, interact with me, which is what happens, rather than looking directly into the lens. So I always use the camera up to my face so that they're talking through the lens. And that's much harder to do when you've got it on a tripod. Very occasionally, there are reasons for using a tripod, but not that often. So I've got two different types of release. I've also got a Nikon speedlight controller in there so that should I decide to do off-camera flash, nice deep blue sky with the faces really beautifully lit, then I've got the kit in there to do it. A whole box load of memory cards, I don't know how many, 10, a combination of 64 and 32 gig memory cards, always more than I need, because at any time, should one fail, I can pick another one up, and we always make sure that the images are going onto two memory cards at a time. Remember, this is all about being fail-safe. You have to think of it as what happens when, not what happens if, but what happens when this bit fails. What do I do? So we always have duped memory cards, two lots of cameras, two lots of lenses, etc., etc. In there, there's also some chewing gum because, sometimes you need some chewing gum and some Nurofen. I always have Nurofen in the bag. Because, of course, having a headache is not an excuse for slowing down. And occasionally you get a blooming headache. So I do carry Nurofen with me in my bag. But, of course, that's the bag I carry with me when I'm working around here at the studio or when I'm on a regular gig. But what happens when you go out on a flight? Well, for a start, I'm terrified because I do not let the camera out of my sight. But I don't have the weight allowance to take all of that stuff. So I've got a, I don't know how to pronounce this, I'm very sorry. I think it's Thule, T-H-U-L-E, Thule backpack. And that's got a really neat cartridge type bag within it that you pull out and you can slide in an SLR with a pair of lenses. And that's really useful because one of the challenges I have whenever I travel is I'm the one that gets stopped at the X-ray machine. Yep, always me. It's always me. It happens every single time. It must be a combination of the type of kit I've got. They just want to see what it is. And I end up bringing out the laptop and the iPad. And the, if I'm working abroad, of course, I've got my Wacom digitizer tablet in there as well. I've got chargers and cables, and I've got a camera, and I've got a spare camera, and I've got lenses, and I've got memory cards. The whole thing weighs an absolute ton, and I have to walk through. I walk through check-in, trying. I've got it slung on one shoulder, trying to make it look kind of casual, like it's not about. It's nearly as heavy as my checked bags. It must be about 16 or 17 kilos. This thing. But it just kind of dangles off my shoulder, and I try to make it look really light and not huge. And of course, it weighs an absolute ton. So when I'm traveling like that, I will use a slightly different rucksack, and it has in it this compartment, which I put in the D5, a 70 to 200, and depending what I'm doing, either the 35 to 70 or the 105. The other lenses will go into my checked bags. But this goes with me. And I also carry with me my Fuji X-T1 with a very basic 35 to 70 type lens on the front of it, which just gives me peace of mind so that if anything went wrong, I do still have a spare camera with me. It's not the one that I would normally choose to use, but I can still do it. It's a pretty effective camera. And of course, in my rucksack, I do have my laptop and the iPad, which I use as a second screen. I've got my digitizer tablet in there. I've got pens and a pad. I've got all sorts of bits and pieces, obviously the cables for it. Basically, you should be able to do the job off any bag. So if a bag went missing, then I should still be able to do my gig. And then I put all of the rest of the kit into my checked baggage and I pray. It's a horrible thing. I'm not very good at this bit of it. And I've heard all sorts of stories. But essentially, when I'm traveling around the world, I should be able to lose one of the bags and still do my job. That's the idea of it anyway. And that's why I carry my bag. And we've learned to do it over the years. It doesn't sound very exciting now I've chosen it as a topic, but it was a topic that somebody asked me to list out. And maybe at some point we'll go through it and do some tips on what to take. I'll tell you one tip, hoover your bag. Whatever you do, hoover your bag. One of the things I get a lot of is I get a lot of dust on the lenses, both on the front and rear elements, simply because I'm forever changing them on the camera. I only tend to use one body, and I switch the lenses. I'm not one of those photographers that feels very comfortable using one camera with a lens on each shoulder on a strap. I really don't like it. It doesn't make me comfortable. I've crouched down a couple of times when I used to try doing that, and I've dumped a camera with its lens straight into the gravel because it's low slung on my shoulder. So I don't like that very much. So I'm forever switching lenses, but that introduces dust. So you must keep your camera bag hoovered out and keep it clean as best you can. I can highly recommend the Manfrotto bag. It is very good. I've tried Lowepro bags. I've tried ThinkTank bags. We've had all sorts in here, but the Manfrotto is the one that I think I've enjoyed using the most, in spite of the fact that it is looking remarkably tatty and battered on the outside, but the inside is still pretty good. I mean, obviously the Velcro has collapsed like it always does. At some point, somebody should invent some way of making those, what do they call them? The dividers, the Velcro dividers inside your camera bag, rock solid so they don't all slide around after 6 months of use. When you first get a camera bag, it's brilliant. Everything's really stiff and tight, and you put your camera in and you move it around and you open it up when you finish traveling somewhere and everything is exactly where you left it. Now it's all kind of slumped quietly to the south end. But I forgive it that because it's been an exemplary bag and I've really, really loved it. So on that happy note, I hope you're having a good week. I'm sorry this podcast took a while to come out. I really have been out of the country for a few days. Came back to find you'd all had the most incredible storms. Very jealous, I have to say. I'm very jealous. And we had no such storm. And Jake, our son, was showing us some absolutely fantastic images off the back of his camera where he'd laid out in our back garden watching the sheet lightning overhead while I was on the other side of the Mediterranean. So anyway, if you have any questions or comments, if you'd like to get in touch with us, then you can do so through masteringportraitphotography.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you are one of our happy members, then great. If you're not, well, why not think about joining? It's a very nice community of people, tons of videos, tons of content, all about portrait photography. Well, nearly all about portrait photography and the business of portrait photography. You never know, you might just like it. So until next time, remember, be kind to yourselves. Take care.